From WGVU Public Media, this is Powerful Women Let's Talk. Conversations with women making an impact in West Michigan. Stay connected to Powerful Women. Please like and subscribe.
This season on Powerful Women for Women's History Month, we're looking at women who made history in West Michigan and women who are making history right now. Today, we look at a woman who's made history, talking to Julie Taberer, librarian and archivist at the Grand Rapids Public Library, about Helen Clater, who made history with her YWCA stellar work. I bring you to the microphone, Julie. Hello to you.
Hello, Shelley.
I appreciate you and all the work you've done to present us with Helen Clater, who has certainly made her mark in our West Michigan. Why Helen Clater for this discussion?
So that feels like a simple, easy question, but I think there's so many reasons. So Helen is someone who is pretty well known within the community. And, you know, if you're listening and you're thinking like, well, I don't know Helen. Household level name recognition is like a whole, that's a whole big thing. But within the context of history, you know, Helen, she's in the Michigan Women's Hall of Fame. She has a sculpture downtown at GRCC as part of the community legends sculptures. She has a Wikipedia page. She's been, you know, she's gotten so many awards and been recognized, like she's gotten her due. And yet there is so much to her that like I had no idea and didn't know about. So the work that we talk about with her, it's just really hard. You know, you have to summarize someone in order to talk about them. And that ends up being, you know, kind of a quick, not necessarily surface level, but a summary. And it's just so fascinating to me that there's beyond what she's known for, there's, which is significant, there's even more like just layers and layers of interesting things to her.
Let's get the elephant out of the room. How did she become affiliated with our YWCA?
Yes. So Helen's life was like intertwined with the YWCA. She grew up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and she joined the Y as a young girl. And then after college, she studied education. She wanted to be a teacher, but she was only offered jobs in the South, and she did not want to work in the South. So she took a job with the YWCA instead. And then she worked for the YWCA in New Jersey and Kansas City. And as part of her work with the national YWCA, she came to Grand Rapids to work with the Y here. And while she was here, she met Robert Clater, who she, you know, fell in love with and married, and that kept her in Grand Rapids.
Nice. Tell us a little bit more about her story of presidency and moving into a unique house.
Yeah. So in when she moved to Grand Rapids, she had done some pretty significant work with the YWCA. So she was kind of coming in as a, I don't know, celebrity, but in the YWCA world. And then she joined the local, Grand Rapids YWCA board and ran for president. And she became the first Black president of the Grand Rapids YWCA. She was also the first Black president of any local YWCA in the country. And the story of her becoming president and the story of them moving into their house have similar themes because, they were, if not the one of the first Black families in their neighborhood. And in both instances, you know, Helen became president of the YWCA. They moved into the neighborhood, but neither were without struggles. So when she ran for presidency of the Grand Rapids YWCA, there was a lot of support from the woman on the board, from the white woman on the board for her running. But there was one woman who basically like ran a campaign against her and tried to get someone else to run. And that ultimately did not succeed. But when she was voted in, a couple of other board members immediately resigned. So it was a little, it was a little messy and people were not everyone was ready for a Black president.
Yes. Do you have a time frame for this? 19? Do we know?
You know, it is so hard to remember all these numbers. I think it was the 1940s.
Yes. Yes.
Late 1940s.
There was a letter she wrote about school kids crossing Ann Street. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. So Helen, just a little bit of context first. She, is notable in the Grand Rapids YWCA, but then she went into leadership roles nationally, and she became president of the, you know, the whole the YWCA, and she was, you know, on these major committees, meeting at the White House, and she was traveling internationally. Like she's really involved and important. So I went to the Bentley Historical Library in Ann Arbor. Some of her papers are there. Some are at the Grand Rapids Public Library. But I wanted to look at the ones at the Bentley. And I had so much to look at and like only so much time. So I was trying to get through a ton. But there was a folder on Creston Neighborhood Association, which is nice. My neighborhood association.
Yes, and so as it should be. Yep.
I wanted to look at that folder. And it was labeled awards or something. And so when I opened it, there was her handwriting, and she wrote just text of all of her different speeches. So I thought, like, oh, this is going to be a draft of, like, an acceptance speech. But it wasn't. It was a draft of a letter that she wrote, maybe to a commissioner, I'm not sure, about advocating for a traffic light to be installed on Ann Street. So that so that traffic would be better, but also most importantly, so that kids crossing the street to school could be safe. And at the time when I read this, I was in fact crossing that same street every morning with my son, taking him to school. And it's still a busy street, and you know, there's crossing guards and all of that. So just across those decades, connecting with Helen and seeing, like, she lived in my neighborhood. She was involved in these national and international topics, and yet she took the time to care about the kids in her neighborhood and wrote a letter advocating for a traffic light to help keep them safe.
A couple of her themes that she leaves us with: equal dignity for all people, collective nature of the work.
Yes.
What does this mean?
So equal dignity for all people is really something that just is a thread throughout so much of her writing. And I spent some time reviewing some of her notes and her speeches before I came today. And I meant to kind of look over like all of it and get a, but I quickly got like pulled in because it's so interesting and there's a ton of depth to, you know, what she was thinking about and writing. So it's really interesting. So when I pull out themes, I want to be really careful to say that, like, these are themes I'm recognizing, but there's a lot there. And, you know, I want to make sure that I do her justice and represent her works well. But she really, really seemed to, you know, come back to the idea of, you know, dignity for all people. And I think that's something that, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, of course, equal dignity for all people. Like, it's almost so easy to say that it almost doesn't mean anything. But where it really, you know, gets interesting is seeing how she applied that throughout her work with the YWCA and in Grand Rapids, because she, from the 1940s through the 2000s, she was active in advocating for equality and for racial justice and civil rights. And she had, I mean, that's not easy. And she had a lot of difficult choices to make where not everyone would agree on how to move forward in a situation. And she really, like, I think she seemed to have navigated those complicated spaces really well and kept coming back to equal dignity for all people. You know, if there are Black members of the Y who are facing discrimination, then their concerns are the concerns of the entire Y. And we need to advocate for that.
Looking at many of her non-YWCA roles, too many to list. But again, look where her interests lay. Michigan Youth Commission, Family Service Association. Of course, yes, National Women's Advisory Committee for Civil Rights. And you were correct. She did her service for the Y in the late 1940s. And 67-70, president of the YWCA of the United States.
Mm-hmm. And the really significant thing that happened when Helen was president of the Y, I learned a lot about the Y while I was learning about Helen as well. They would hold conventions, like national conventions, I think every few years, where everyone would come together and decide what the sort of purpose and direction of the Y would be over the next, say, 3 years. And in 1970, while she was president at the convention that she presided over, the YWCA adopted an imperative to eliminate racism wherever it may be found. And that is still in their logo today. They have right in their logo, it's eliminating racism and empowering women. And so that legacy of, where Helen, under Helen's leadership, where that started is just, it's so cool to see. And you mentioned the importance of collaboration earlier, which pulls yes. back to that.
Good.
And the thing that was also really cool to see is that, like, yeah, Helen was the president. And I think when I went into it, I was just like, oh, cool, she was the president. Like, she gets to claim this. This is her thing. And then as you read through, you know, the notes and what happened and her speeches, it should not be surprising. Like, one person usually isn't responsible for something great happening. It's the work of many people. And Helen was very, like, she would say that a lot as well. Like, this is the work of a lot of people. She'd recognize other people, not take the credit. So she presided over that, but it was a group of Black women, Y members, who really, like, pushed for it and brought it to the floor and, like, made that happen. And Helen, you know, helped to provide leadership and a path for it to happen, but it was a collaborative effort.
Has her daughter Judith talked about her mom?
Yeah, so it's been really neat to get to know Judith over the last few years. Talking with her about some, photographs that she has that she's donating to the library from the family. And it's when you see these historical figures who do these amazing things, it's easy, you can kind of put them on a pedestal or think like, oh, they're just these big figures. So then hearing Judith talk about her mom, and she calls her mama, and just talk, just hearing that more personal side is really, I don't know. I think it's kind of special.
This year of 2026, we celebrate a 250th birthday, of course, of the United States. Certainly 175th birthday of Grand Rapids presented. We're all in this together. How would Helen Claytor celebrate this year? Talk to me about, I trust she wouldn't want us to stop reaching for big things or limit our idea of what's possible.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in quite that way. What would Helen Claytor think about? What would she be doing right now? That is an interesting question. But one thing that really strikes me in looking through her notes throughout the years, initially in the 1940s in a speech, she talks about living in uncertain times. And in a speech shortly after World War II, she said, still we are living amidst one of the greatest upheavals of all ages. The forces for mastering slavery still are warring with the force for freedom and equality. And, being active through that post-World War II time and then the Civil Rights era, Helen certainly saw a lot of, significant things happening and the world felt unsettled. And that resonates with how a lot of people are feeling now. And so just thinking about how she kept bringing that back to the equal dignity of all people and bringing equality to all people.
I'm looking at some of your materials. Thank you for presenting that for our conversation. What are a couple of, you've brought in a photocopy of, what is this of?
So this is a snapshot of just one of her notes for speeches that is in the Bentley Historical Library. And she hand wrote, she would type some of them, but she hand wrote a lot of notes, what she was going to say. And just reading through all of those is just, and it's so great to see it in her handwriting as well. It helps to, feel a more personal connection to her. And then throughout her notes too, she just, Helen herself and then the entire family, the Jackson family, her maiden name was Jackson, they were just connected with so many significant figures in United States history. So Helen's first husband, Earl Wilkins, was a journalist. He passed away, which is when she married Robert Claytor. But Earl was the brother of Roy Wilkins, who was the head of the National NAACP. And then Helen's sister, Marvel Cook, was active in the Harlem Renaissance. She worked for W.E. Du Bois, and she knew, Langston Hughes and Dorothy Parker. And, their whole family is just incredible and so interesting.
There is, for lack of better terms, a statue of Helen Claytor.
Yes, there is. So it is at Grand Rapids Community College, and I'm not sure what the official name is, but they have like a plaza. It's across from the library, so I can, you know, look at it out the window from our archives. And it's part of the Community Legends project that Peter Secchia started. So she's one of the statues, and then you know, I believe there are some more coming in the next few years.
Why is it important that we keep Helen Claytor's memory alive?
Like, can feel like such a big question sometimes. Why do we? This is what I do, is you know, archiving and preserving history, and I of course think it's important. But then stopping to think sometimes, like, okay, but why? I know that I personally have learned a lot and grown so much in getting to read about the history of Grand Rapids specifically. So you can read about national history and trends, but there's something different about reading about what's happening in your own place, and, you know, knowing that that's your community, seeing how the, you know, actions that people took impacted the city and the community that we have today. You know, sometimes that's positive, sometimes it's not. And so Helen, with so many other people, like Helen certainly is someone who had a major impact on Grand Rapids. And I think it's important to look at where we've been and where we're going, and to be able to do it with some nuance as well, which is where having, you know, archival records and people's notes and things really come into play.
Yes. If you could spend an hour with Helen Claytor, where would you do? Where would you go? What would you do?
So I think they had a cottage up just south of the Mackinac Bridge, and seeing photos of it, there's like lots of books and it looks really cozy. And I think I just want to like spend an hour at their cottage hanging out and maybe have some coffee and just talk.
Yes. Where would we find out more about Helen Claytor and perhaps your work?
Yeah. So you can always learn more about Helen Claytor and Grand Rapids history at the Grand Rapids History Center, the Grand Rapids Public Library. We have a lot of information available online, but there's also a lot that, you know, you do have to come into the library to see. So either way. And then the website of the Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council is a great resource as well. There's a biography of Helen there and many, many other Grand Rapids women as well.
Keeping history alive, our spotlight on Helen Claytor. Thanks to you, librarian, archivist at the Grand Rapids Public Library, Julie Taber. Thank you.
Thanks.
Powerful Women Let's Talk is a production of WGVU Public Media. Episodes available at wgvunews.org and on Apple and Spotify. Please like and subscribe.